Welcome to episode 183 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Chew, Taster's Choice by John Layman. And now, the cast begins.
Thor. Have you seen the new Thor?
I have. My roommate was all mad that they did the press release on The View.
Well, so, like, here's my... I don't have a problem with Thor being a woman. I just don't understand why... Why do they need to do that? Like, what's the point of it? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, the internet feminists will tell you it's to take advantage of women and bring them into their marketing schemes, etc., etc.
So they're even considering this as a bad thing. Do they not know that Lady Loki existed?
I'm really annoyed that people are mad that it was released on The View. It's like, they release this shit on morning talk shows all the fucking time. It doesn't have to be, you know, like, the patriarchy coming to get us.
Yeah. Okay. So, Jen.
Yes?
When you hear people talk about comics for women and comics for girls, what kind of things do you hear them talk about?
Okay. That's skewed, because... I follow, like, a bunch of... Well, I follow Tumblr artists. This week I've been really annoyed with, like... Or not this week, like, this whole month I've been really annoyed with the internet feminist community because they're, like, cray-cray.
Militant?
Yeah. Almost. Well, that and my roommate's been giving me, like, a lot of shit about it because he's, like, he's one of them. Because apparently he understands the female experience and something.
And there's the inherent problem with any man trying to be feminist.
No, it's claiming that you have, like, the upper hand in a conversation because you understand this as well. It's like, this isn't a fucking cockfight.
That's the problem with talking about it with a man. That's what I just said, right?
You know, a weird one that I've heard about is actually by someone who started as a webcomic artist and a Tumblr artist, and now she has a run called Lumberjanes. So that's like the new indie thing.
Oh, I've heard about that. I've heard the name Lumberjanes, and it must have been on Comics Alliance or something.
The comic looks super cool. The thing she did on her Tumblr made me really irritated. Because there's this whole thing in, like, the feminist comics geek girl community that if women go into comic book stores, you're going to get ogled and stared at, and people will say mean things and demean you and be generally nasty and rude.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's actually not the case. There are creepsters out there.
That's a very rare case that happens in, like, the mid-fucking-west or I don't know where.
It's like, the percentage of comic creepsters is, like, the same percentage of overall creepsters. There's just creepsters out there, deal with it. But she put out this form that, like, so you didn't have to talk to your comic shop clerk. You could just fill out, like, this thing. And it said, hello, my name is blank. I would like a copy of Lumberjanes. Can you help me with this?
And it's that, like, seems like the kind of thing that would perpetuate this stereotype. Because the guys who running, presumably the man who's getting the comics for her is going to think, wow, look at this bitch, can't even talk to me.
Yeah, maybe right? Like, it's super bitchy because it goes in assuming that this person's going to treat you like an asshole. But when you assume that about other people, it just makes you the asshole.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine going into something like Comics Conspiracy and handing that really nice dude a form like that and not talking to him. Like, it's super rude.
Yeah, or so. If you went in, I don't know, any comic book store around here.
Yeah,
maybe,
like,
not Legends, but the staff at Legends is run by a creepy old woman. The staff at Legends is cool. It's just Mel who's a weirdo.
Everyone at Legends is really cool. And then there's, like, the creepy old lady whose favorite comic is Spawn. And I judge her more for her favorite comic being Spawn than anything else. I don't know about female targeted comics or anything. Women seem to have an infatuation with Loki.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of this stuff has, like, come up already. Like, Young Avengers was on there, and,
Well, we haven't done Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel, which is a Tumblr darling. And I mean that in the best possible way.
That'll be a good week to discuss what a comic for a lady even is. Because
or
I feel...
I think the question we should ask is lady comics a thing at all?
Yeah. There's kind of an interesting dichotomy that at least I see in people I know where...
Well, I feel like if we have to say that there's comics for women, then we have to maybe assume that there are comics for men as well, and I don't
yeah.
think...
Well...
Well, there are.
Tarot.
This, okay, so one of the ones that confused me the most came up a couple times when I was searching for comics for women was Witchblade. And I was like, are you fucking shitting me? I do not want my wife to read Witchblade, because then
maybe
she'll think that's what comics are like.
It's empowering
you know,
women or something.
That's actually a really good way to frame it. If you had a daughter, and David, when your daughter gets older, what comics would you want her to read? Like, first and foremost.
Well, let's save my answer for that episode.
Okay, but I think that's a good thing to keep in mind, because, like, I will read the most vile, like, offensive crap out there and not care, but if I think, like, if I ever had kids, I would want to pick high-quality materials for them.
Yeah, for sure.
And good role models and shit.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another savory episode of the Atomic Pirate Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Sup, dog?
Oh, word, and Jen.
Yo.
Oh, word.
What? My dog. So yeah, this week we read Chew, Taster's Choice, collecting issues 1-5 by John Layman and Rob Gilroy. No, Gilroy's wrong.
It's Gilroy.
Guillory?
I'm going to go with Guillory.
God. I'm sure he gets that all the time. It's definitely not just us who can't pronounce names.
Guillory?
Guile. Oh, Guiles. I was never good with Guile in Street Fighter. Never.
Well, I know. The holding back for 2 seconds. Like, how long is 2 seconds?
I don't know. But that's the thing, is I was always really good with E. Honda. E. Honda's like my character. But Guile, I got nothing. I don't understand it.
Anyways, we're not talking about Street Fighter.
We can.
Maybe we should do, is there a Street Fighter comic? Probably, but we're...
Oh, God, there are. Of course there are. There's a whole, like, Street Fighter comic, like, artist team. What's the name? Udon.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Shit.
Shoo.
Oh, man, I'm hungry for some udon. Hopefully it's not chicken udon, though. Do they make chicken udon?
Yes.
You can pay for anything in it. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
It's just like soup.
It's a type of noodle. You can put, it's like buckwheat noodles. You can put whatever you want, right?
I know what
no,
I'm having
really,
for lunch tomorrow.
It's a really thick noodle.
Yeah. Oh, soba is buckwheat noodles. Udon is different wheat.
So I gotta ask an awkward question. Did either one of you guys get really hungry while you were reading this comic?
No, actually. I didn't think I'd finish reading in time because normally I read while I eat dinner. I couldn't handle it. And, you know, honestly, it wasn't the eating of nasty things. I have zero tolerance for barf.
And then
actually,
makes everybody barf?
Yeah, that issue, I had to close the book and walk away for about 20 minutes until I got over my nausea.
Oh, wow.
It was, like, I had a really strong reaction to that. I was just like, oh, God. So
Ms. Mintz got to you, too.
Yeah. Like, I didn't even need to hear her description. It got me.
Yeah, I got really hungry, and I'm going to have some fried chicken for lunch tomorrow. There's no way around it.
Fried chicken?
Luckily, I work, like, 3 blocks from a KFC. Just not good fried chicken, but it'll do. It'll do. So anyway, yeah, Chew. This is something I read the first issue of a long, long time ago, and I was like, that's neat. I really like the premise of, like, a world where chicken is outlawed, and this one guy seems to have this super rare power. And it was neat because it was like, you could tell it would be quirky and funny and oddly dark in a bunch of weird ways. You know, like you can kind of get that from the start because you get the quirkiness right off the bat because the two guys, they're bantering. It's just like any other like procedural cop show. But the quirky funniness comes in as soon as you meet Savoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Agent Savoy is wonderful.
So, I gotta say, I actually didn't know very much about the premise of this before we read it. All I knew is that it was about a detective who could get psychic impressions from things he ate. So, when I picked this up, I was expecting, like, a dark crime noir, you know, guy who has to, like, grittily eat things in a weird way while drinking his coffee and smoking his cigarette. And this was not it. Like, I really enjoyed the premise. I thought the bird flu thing was cool. But did you guys know about the bird flu and the FDA, like, fascism and everything?
No, I didn't get that.
No, I didn't know it. Yeah, see, my introduction to Chew was back when it came out, I remember people being, oh, this is like an awesome comic you have to read. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll check it out someday. And then my comic book shop, Elusive Comics in Santa Clara, they had John Layman come to the store to do a signing. And I was, and they had like all the Chew stuff out. And I was like, hey, that's interesting. I wonder if I have any comics written by John Layman to get signed. So I went through my box, my long boxes, or I looked at his page and I was like, oh, I have Marvel Zombie versus Army of Darkness.
That's awesome.
So I got my variant cover of Marvel Zombies versus Army of Darkness number one, in which Zombie Captain America is punching out Zombie Hitler.
Excellent.
So that I have that signed by John Layman, in which he wrote a word bubble above Captain America's head saying "pow."
I like this guy.
Yeah, and then like I was like, oh, I think he might have been surprised because this is when Chew was like.
Height of the popularity.
I think the first trade had come out, so it was pretty popular. And maybe he was surprised that somebody was having him sign Marvel Zombies.
Sign this of all things.
But I really love, you know, it has Bruce Campbell or Ash.
Yeah.
But yeah, even after that, I still did not read this comic until now.
Yeah. It's funny because I think Chew kind of started Image down the path that they're on today. Of giving artists, both, you know, pencilers, colorists, and writers, giving them a palette to draw these comics on and to, like, put their ideas out in as pure form as possible. Because this one is from 5 years ago, I think, 5 or 6 years ago, Chew came out. And
yeah, I want to say, like, 2010, 2009.
2009, yeah, I think.
I remember when it came out, I had the same reaction you did, Dave. I was like, oh, yeah, I'll pick it up. I'm sure it's good. But, you know, it's not one of the Cape comics that I'm into. So, you know, like, I've got my rotation. I've got my Green Lanterns I got to buy. And then if there's a little bit extra money, sure, I'll buy some indie stuff because, you know, art and things, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of how I was back when this comic first came out. I was mostly buying Cape comics. And it's not that I had an aversion to indie comics. I just... You know, I had to make my choices, and I stuck with what I liked, I guess.
Yeah, you have the characters that you've been buying, and you knew you liked, so you keep buying them. And if you had time and money left over, you'd buy the other cool, hip, new thing, but who really knows? And I think now we're at a point where people will pick up Image comics based on the name of the author and the fact that it's Image. And not that Image itself carries so much weight, but Image suddenly has this reputation of saying, hey, artist, here, go, enjoy.
Well, that's certainly true. Back when this comic came out, I was totally... I would choose what was on my pull list based almost solely on the characters in the book or the team. And now I still do that, but I'm also attracted to particular writers and artists. You know, like Jonathan Hickman... I pick up pretty much all his stuff. I didn't realize there's a comic he writes called Manhattan Projects that I'm going to start picking up too. But yeah, like I will just buy stuff because I really like Jonathan Hickman. So the things I appreciate about comics, I don't think they have really changed, but they've expanded.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's kind of chicken and egg in my head, because it's like, I don't know, I might be changing this way as a reader because I'm getting older and I'm maturing into what I know I like, and I'm finding artists that appeal to what I want in my experience of reading comics, which is why I'm probably no longer ever going to buy Grant Morrison. But that's me growing as a reader and growing up and maturing as a reader. Except it also feels like the industry is doing it with me, so I don't know if me and all of my friends are doing the same thing just because we're growing up and maturing as people and as readers, and so the industry is starting to cater to what we want and cater to how we're changing as an audience, or are we changing as an audience because of the industry leading us that way? Like, I don't know which way it goes, but either way, I really like it, and in my mind, stuff like Chew is kind of where that started.
I feel like, I think it's probably multiple things. Like you mentioned that there's more, well, especially, you know, comics or publishers like Image and Dark Horse are making it, they're empowering people to do like creator owned stuff. I mean, I don't know to what degree that books like Chew or East of West or Pretty Deadly are, creator owned, but it's certainly, they're certainly giving more carte blanche to creators, it seems like. And I think that's giving people, you know, readers and purchasers of comics a wider variety of things to get to read. And I think that's great for the industry because it'll bring readers into comic book publishing that wouldn't necessarily buy comics because they're not interested in reading Cape comics, you know? And if people, at least at first, they might not be interested in it, but getting them into the store to look at and seeing what there is, what publishers like Marvel and DC have to offer, you know, is good for everybody. You know, it's good for us as readers because, you know, it gives us more variety because the industry is potentially making more money. You know, it gives us new and interesting things to read, and it's good because there's more people buying comics, which means the industry is not going to go away. And I think probably part of the reason why this is possible is maybe because of digital publishing too.
Yeah, and well, I was also thinking that, like, another big thing that Image is tapping on nowadays that might have even been, if it came out today, how Chew would have gotten its first chance is things like Kickstarter. There are so many comics. Like, when you mentioned creator-owned, I immediately thought of creator-owned heroes and Jimmy Palmiotti and all the stuff that he and his team do on Kickstarter. Like, almost every other month you can go on a Kickstarter and it seems like they have something else, something up new there. And I know it's not every month, it's like every third or fourth month. But it's like, it's a creative team that's continually producing things that's entirely creator-owned, and you follow the artists, you follow the authors, and you follow their careers, and you just know when they have something coming out on Kickstarter, and you purchase that. You, like, buy it through that venue. And I'm trying to think, I know there's a couple that got started on Kickstarter and then got picked up, like, the next month by Image. And so it's almost like Kickstarter is turning into a testing ground for some of these younger people trying to come up with their own new ideas. Because it's all well and good to want to write for DC and Marvel, but I'm sure there's so many people that are creative people that came up with an idea. Like, I honestly want to know how long the idea for Chew was bouncing around in John Layman's head before he could finally get somebody to publish it. And maybe it would have been so much sooner, I mean, in a world other than 5 years ago.
If you think about it, too, Vertigo was the Image of, like, the late 70s, 80s, all the way through the very early 90s. And then I think, you know, there were legal disputes, right, about, you know, who gets to keep which characters. I feel like I should be able to cite something here, but I actually can't. So maybe I'm making that up. But I do know that there were, like, just creativity control issues. Like, for instance, with Sandman, you know, that really pushed boundaries, but I think there were still times when the publisher, you know, was telling Neil Gaiman, no, you need to rein this in, or we don't think that idea will sell, things like that. And I mean, I don't know the inner workings of Image, but I don't know how much editorial, you know, oversight they have. Obviously, it's nowhere near the extent of, like, mainline DC and Marvel. But at the same time, you know, how much do they say, oh, we can't publish this? That, clearly not too much, considering this comic.
Yeah. This one's great. Like, the first time the F-bomb gets dropped, I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
I didn't notice that.
You didn't notice? Somebody, I think Appleby calls Chew a fuckface in here at one point.
Yeah, he does.
That did not even register at all.
Well, I think the first curse you see is when Chew's brother is, like, the flashback to when he's on the air and he says it's all bullshit.
Yeah.
Is there a curse before? I don't know. But anyway, it happens pretty quickly.
He starts dropping the F-bomb there, too, I think, right?
Yes, I don't know.
And then his brother calls Tony a douche at some point.
Yeah, I remember that part.
You were always a douchebag.
Oh yeah, the Chow does say fuck.
But I do like that bit because in the very beginning, this comic did a really good job of setting up its vibe. You know, like, you get in the beginning, you get the little brief about Chew and who he is and how his powers work, and then the thing with the beats, and you're like, okay, there's no explanation for why beats, just beats. And then, like, the Ren and Stimpy log, like, beats!
Yes.
There, yeah. Like, fuck it, beats! And then you also get, like, the knowledge that what you're going to be in for is going to be a little bit gross and a little bit sickening when his partner complains and the kid spits in the coffee and gives it back to him. It's like, okay, it's going to have all of this stuff in it. And you also get, what's the first one? I think it's a cow getting smashed with a hammer or something. And
yeah.
Yeah.
First page.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, early on, you get a good sense for what you're in for with this comic. It does a really good job of setting tone, and that flashback is another good example of it. Because then it's like, okay. And that was a great way to set up the premise for this comic, to have him just go off his rocker and rant about it. Because then not only do you get the premise that chicken are outlawed, there's fake chicken supplements, but also the fact that it might be a conspiracy, it could be a hoax. Like, all of that set up really neatly in 9 little panels.
Yeah, they really... John Layman does a great job of putting, like, throwing you right into this world. And, you know, I think with a lot of, like, detective-type comics, they could potentially, you know, do a slow burn type of thing. But I think it's better this way, where... Because this world is so, like, there's a lot of opportunities here to do some interesting things.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, it's cool the way that they've done it, you know. I appreciate the throwing you into the deep end type of thing.
Yeah. It was also really neat how they also have other people with slightly different powers, so it doesn't seem that weird that Tony has this psychic ability. Because, I mean, Savoy has it too, right? And then the food writer lady has a different one.
Sabo Scrivener.
Yeah. That's such a great term.
I know. There's so many good fake terms in this. Like, what is it? Is Cybopath? Cybopath? How do you even pronounce that? I don't know.
I don't know.
Cybopath? I don't know. But, you know, this is, oh, it's like Harry Potter meets Food Network meets, like, Frank Miller Detective Noir.
I was going to say, because right when you said Harry Potter and stuff, I was scrolling past the page where his partner gets an axe to the head. Or not an axe, a butchering knife.
Yeah, like a cleaver.
Yeah, right to the head.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's. I guess you could say it's Frank Miller-esque in that it's pretty graphic, but I think it's graphic for different reasons. Not like, you know, Dark Knight Returns is supposed to be gritty, and this is going for the shock factor, but from a comedy angle.
And this is shocking also, not to be like, everything's shocking and you should feel shocked. I think this is... really to tell us how shitty Tony's life is.
Yeah.
Because I sympathize with him every step of the way. I'm just like, this poor guy. He does not deserve this.
Yeah, one of the most pitiful moments in the comic is when his boss throws his beet salad in the trash, and they're like, oh, he's not going to fucking eat for the rest of the day now.
Yeah.
And like, oh my god. Like, of all the things that guy could say, of all the things Applebee could say... Chew can handle it. Like whatever. I'm sure he's had his fair share of ball busters and all that shit. But the salad, man. The salad. What is he going to eat? He's just screwed now. But the repeated graphic, it does pay a... Because even then when he eats salad, you're like, okay, the beets are in there, but even the lettuce is going to have some kind of thing. And it's like, you can't eat. You can't do one of the basic functions of life without experiencing this big event happening in his mind.
Yeah, and, oh, especially when he reads the food reviews.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And he's like, this is the first time I've ever felt like I'm eating. And you're just like, I don't know, like, I have so much pity for him, and I really just root for him. Because he's not, he's sad, but he's not a sad sack, right? You just want him to win.
Yeah, because you want, it's a different way of coming, of showing a protagonist than we get in, like, Cape comics. It's not like, look at this badass and how badass he can be because he's such a badass. It's like, man, look at this guy. He's trying to do good, but look how sad he is.
And
he's
so
sad.
There's no woman in a refrigerator or anything like that here. This is just a guy trying to be a good cop who happens to have this power. That's what I really appreciate, is he's just a guy going out there trying to do his job. I mean, when we first see him as a beat cop, he's not...
A beat cop.
Oh, that might even be... Oh, God. God, I hope that was on purpose. Like, he's out there... He's not even, like, out there to catch a chicken anything. He's out there for this, like, gangster little bitch, you know? Like...
D-Bear.
Yeah, D-Bear. He's out there for D-Bear. He's, like, he's just out there for the murder. Like, he's working... His job, nothing to do with his ability. He's just out there trying to make a living. And it just kind of snowballs from there. I like that there's no great dramatic need for motivation or a spur to action. There's no, you don't need any of that. He's just, you know, he's a guy. And like, if you're looking for background on why he is this way, I mean, his brother just straight up tells you, He says, Tony, you've always been kind of a douchebag, haven't you? He's like, okay, he's always been a cop.
Yeah.
He's always been that kind of guy.
Yeah, I love that his brother calls him for help, and he's like, you asshole, I heard you work for the FDA now. Can you help me, please?
You know, that's a part I love about him, too. It's that he's a good guy, but, you know, he's not like... But when we get superheroes, they're either just too good, like Superman, or they're, you know, flawed, but still very good, like, I don't know, Hal Jordan.
Damn it.
But this guy is, like, he's not even just, like, super flawed like a superhero would be. He's just kind of douchey, and he's like, clearly anal retentive and uptight, right? He's a good guy, he's not a great guy.
Yeah.
But in a way that you sympathize with, too. I like that about him, is, like, he is the douchey kind of guy, but then the moment I sympathized with him the most, when I really fell in love with Tony Chu, was when he was at the McBeef.
Oh,
and that
yeah.
stupid little fucking teenager. I knew kids like that. Everybody listening to this show, you two probably knew stupid fucking kids like that who were like, oh, I know things about the law, man. If a cop ever did that to me, I'd get right up on his face and I'd tell him like it was, you know? Like, and like
get tased.
Some fucking douchey kid, you know, just would go around doing that shit. And everybody knew that that kid was just full of himself and just talking himself up. And if anything actually happened, he would just cower down like a little bitch. And here we get to see it actually happen. Here we get to see that douchey kid do what he said he was going to do. Except then Chu calls him on it and just fucks with him. And I loved him for that. And he doesn't even like fuck with him a little bit. He goes straight for murdering the entire family.
And that's another fun thing. It's like, you know, he's a rookie in the FDA, but you get the sense that he's a pretty experienced cop, because I don't think that's something a rookie cop would do, right? He knew exactly what he was up to.
That was great. I go back to that scene, too, because those the people in that... So later on, we get the, like, the terrorists, right? Or the truth terrorists, I don't know. The people who kidnap Mintz.
Egg.
Except in the McBeef, the people working have a little egg patch on their shirt as well.
You noticed that too?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I think it's because they're like rebel teenagers, right?
Oh, yeah, like they're like those stupid fucking kids who put like anarchy patches on their backpack.
It's like, I don't think you know what that actually...
I don't think you know what that means, because then I can just punch you right now and you just couldn't, like, what?
I'm sure that's exactly how that conversation would go.
That's how it went when I was in high school.
What? Sorry, idiot.
You have to understand. I've been doing orientation at the university where I work the last couple of weeks, and God, I hate incoming freshmen. Teenagers are the fucking worst. People come in with those anarchy patches and stupid shit like that.
It's like, punk rock.
You're going to a public university. What anarchy you got here, huh?
And, down with the man.
And your parents are like hovering over you, handing you flyers and pointing you and telling you where to go. But anarchy, man, anarchy.
See, that's the kids at the fucking burger joint, right? They're like, tell it to that dirty cop. And it's like, you're at work in a burger joint. Like... You're not a revolutionary, sorry.
And if this is the highlight of your day, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. And it's like, this place has been rated, you know, D by the FDA. It's, you're not changing the world right there.
So, Tony Chu is the guy that we're kind of, like, supposed to be there, kind of along the ride with. Except then Savoy comes in and just fucking steals the show.
Oh, yeah.
From the second... I mean, we talked last week about how Peter liked a grand opening. Like, he liked the grand entrance, you know, the big introduction. That was, like, Peter's thing last month. Or, not last month, last week. But, man, Savoy makes a hell of an entrance. Comes in, bigger than life, flashes the FDA badge, and was like, you got a choice. You can go and have a pissing match between your boss and my boss, and your boss will back down, or... You can go have a nice chicken dinner. And the language, oh my God, the way he talks is just, it's delicious. It's like he savors the language. It's wonderful.
See, I at first thought he was going to be like a major antagonist, right? I'm thinking, oh, he's going to set up Tony and his partner, And then he's, like, gonna bust him for eating at this chicken joint or something, and he's gonna be the evil British man with his twirly mustache.
Yeah, have you seen... Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, he just did end up being the kind of evil British guy. I don't know if he's evil.
There was there's a commercial, a TV commercial for Jaguar about British, how British guys are always bad guys, and it has, like, Tom Hiddleston and...
Oh, yeah.
And Ben Kingsley and a couple other British actors who always play villains. It's really funny. Sorry, I just thought of that because we're...
Yeah, they say it's good to be bad and it ends with a jaguar.
Yeah.
I've seen that one too. That one's pretty good. I get that on Hulu.
Sorry, that's like that just came to my mind when you mentioned that.
That's okay. So what did you guys think of Savoy's like development throughout this comic? Because he develops and changes. Well, maybe he doesn't change, but our knowledge of him changes as the comic goes along, and so he becomes a dynamic character, even though he himself maybe doesn't necessarily change. Like, what did you guys think of like the revolution of him being a villain?
Well, what I like about this comic that is kind of captured in Savoy's character is that we learn things with Tony. Like, it's not necessarily a first-person narrative, but we're focused on him. And so, you know, we're learning about Savoy and Appleby and all the other characters in this comic along with Tony. And so it's kind of, you know, I like that there's not... you know, we see things as they happen. It's not like, this is Mason Savoy, and he's British, and he's 75 years old, and he likes to eat people's ears and stuff, you know?
Yeah, we do get a narrator, but I don't feel like the omniscient narrator is never intrusive. It just gives you the right amount of information that you need, only in the beginning and end of the story, usually, just like during the epilogue part, the prologue. And it, after that, like, you're right, you're on your own. It's you and Tony Chu, and that's it.
Well, I think the narrator gives us just enough to get started with it, like you said, without being intrusive. So anyways, back to your actual question, Andy. What did I think of...
Oh, yeah.
Of Savoy's character? I thought it's interesting because... I mean, I like him as a character because... There's not really... I can't think of a good example of a similar character. You know, he's kind of aloof, but not pretentious. I'm trying to think of a good way to put it. But I like him. I guess I'll just leave it at that and let you guys talk for a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Savoy makes a great entrance, and the language that he uses throughout the comic really endears you to him because he's such an enigmatic person. But when I really, the moment when I was like, the moment when you see not just that who he is, but the entire time he's that kind of like jovial mentor kind of person, right? And he'll surprise you when he busts out the size and completely ninjas the fuck up. Like, that was awesome. But the moment for him that I think was most revealing is when they go to the morgue and he has a disagreement with the mortician. And he says, but I told you specifically to not harm the body in any way. I told you. I fucking told you. And the guy says, he does this thing like, I don't want you doing that. I don't want you, you know, you can take these ashes and you can do whatever you want from there. He's like, whatever I want, huh? Sounds good. And just dumps it in the fan. That moment is great because it shows that he doesn't pay much credence to other people's concerns for what he's doing. He's right and you're wrong. And that's the way he interacts with Appleby, and that's the way he interacts with Chu, and that's the way he interacted with the mortician, and that scene is where you really kind of get it. And that's also where I realize, like, he's pushing Chu along, and he's making Chu do so many things that he could just as well do himself. Like, you get that from the very beginning, when he's like, I'll eat the ear, or like, I'll eat the finger, but you should do it. And like, the entire time he's telling Chu that he should do things. And then you kind of get at the end, maybe he was trying to get a sense for what kind of person Chu is like, so that when he ends up having to turn, like, does he have to then be an antagonist for Tony Chu? Can he turn Tony Chu to his side? You know, like, you kind of get the sense at the end of this that the entire time Savoy has been doing reconnaissance on Tony. But that moment with the mortician is when I was like, that's when I started to, like, not suspect anything, but then it's like, that is... out of character for what we knew about him from all before this. And that at that moment's when you can begin to question some of the things that he does. And then you kind of start to see a pattern, because I gotta say, I had no idea. When the reveal happened, I was clueless. But you start to notice the patterns of what he's doing when he interacts with Tony.
So I started noticing with the dog, because when he goes and checks out the apartment of the missing health inspector, he says, like, oh, you know, he left his dog here and all that was left, he was skin and bones. And that made it sound like the dog was alive, but then you see the dead dog with the bite out of its back.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, he didn't just, he's so upfront, you think he would have just said, well, I ate some of the dog and found out such and such, but he didn't. You know, he kept that hidden. And then if you translate what's the going Russian. On in Russian, he says something along the lines of, like, you know, I'm looking for the truth. And the lady says, your government, you know, is for anything but the truth. And he says, I don't work for my government. I'm my own boss.
Yeah.
So you could kind of see the turn happening. On the other hand, I'm still not convinced that he's going to be, like, quote-unquote, a villain or even a long-term antagonist, because I don't necessarily think that what he's doing is for, like, a nefarious purpose, and it sounds like he's trying really hard to work for the greater good. Even if he has to, like, kill one person, he thinks he's saving millions of lives, and he's not doing it in the, like, you know, ha-ha-ha, I'll get you, Superman, Lex Luthor kind of way. He's doing it in, like, it sounds like he has to make some tough decisions, and he took a gamble on Tony not being, you know, so authoritarian that he'd go with the FDA, but, you know, try to find the actual truth.
Yeah.
So I really hope, at least, because I do like Savoy and I do like Tony and I liked their relationship, that what happens is that, you know, Tony comes around and realizes that Savoy has actually been working against, you know, evil government conspirators the whole time or something like that. Because I, at this point, even though he's turned and he ripped off his ear, I can't believe that he's even going to be, like, a real antagonist in this story.
Oh, see, I think he is not, evil's a wrong word, because you're right, he's not nefarious.
No.
But he is very much the intellectual, self-rationalizing kind of evil that is insidious in a certain kind of way. Because, you know, if I say, if you had to kill one person to save a million, would you do it? Would you kill two people? Would you kill three, four, five, 1,000, 10,000?
Yeah, like, where do you...
Yeah.
As soon as... It's one of those things where he's gotten to the point as a person where he's rationalizing murder. And whether or not the rationalization is sound logic, you murdered a dude. You know? And not all murder... I'll say not all murder is flatly wrong. We'll just say that. I'm sure there's some people out there that could have been murdered. Like, I'm sure Hitler, you know, it would have changed the future. If you go back and murder him, it would change the future. But I'm pretty sure we'd, you know, it'd be good. But, like, as soon as you're the person that actually does it, like, we can sit here and we can have this discussion about going back in time and killing Hitler. We can have the discussion philosophically. But as soon as you're the person to actually do it, that changes you as a person. Because then you might have done it for good, but you are a murderer. And so Savoy is a murderer. He's rationalized it. He's convinced he's on the right path. I'm sure he has evidence that we haven't seen, but he murdered a dude. And he's rationalized it, and that's just as good as any rationalization anybody would give for any murder. As far as I'm concerned, it's just murder.
Well, I mean, if you're saying that murder is murder no matter what, then there's no rationalization that anyone could give you that would be enough, right? I'm playing the devil's advocate here. I'm not condoning murder.
Well, you could, but you need to. He doesn't have any accountability for the murder that he's done, and as soon as somebody confronts him with the accountability, he's beating the crap out of him, ripped off his ear, and run away.
Well, I mean, we've established that he feels that what he's doing is for the greater good. And that's how he rationalizes it, right? Whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah.
And I feel like he gives Tony a choice, and then Tony says, you're under arrest. That's when he beats him up and rips off his ear.
Yeah.
I mean, Tony's the kind of, we find out at this point in the story that Tony is the, even though he's disillusioned with his situation, particularly with Appleby, and now with his partner or ex-partner Savoy, you know, he's lawful good, you know, for lack of a better way to describe him, for whatever. And he's lawful good to a fault, at least from Savoy's perspective.
Yeah.
Because I get the feeling that Savoy would have brought him if Tony had agreed to help him, or at least look the other way. That would have been good enough for Savoy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard to say who's right and wrong in this moment, because we don't have enough evidence either way. That's the difficult thing.
Well, no, I think what the you know, the conflict here is not whether or not there is really a conspiracy about the bird flu. The question is, and I think that this is the problem that Tony has with the situation, is that, okay, so even if it is, even if there is a conspiracy that covered up the bird flu and it's some kind of government whatever cover up, does that still rationalize killing someone who's potentially an innocent?
Yeah. And it's,
and I think you're, you know, based on what you said before, Andy, the answer for you is no. You know, I don't
not
know
if without proof,
but is it, does, but we don't know that the health inspector was directly connected to the conspiracy.
Well, no, we don't. And well, for me, the thing is as soon as he's revealed that he's like a hoax believer and he's fighting for, in air quotes, the truth, he throws his hat in with a lot of people that we see in this comic. He's not the first person to mention a hoax. The first person to mention a hoax is Tony's brother, and then it's the kid in the restaurant, and then it's the terrorists. And so Savoy, I don't want to say gets on the side of those people, but he's a hoax believer. He's one of these people who says that the avian flu is a lie and that,
but you see, know. The thing is,
but he's an inside man. Maybe he actually has, like, you know, some knowledge of what's happening, or a legitimate suspicion rather than, you know, a random kid in a burger place whose dad told him not to believe it.
Right. And that gives him credibility when you look at how crazy the other people are. Right. Except he's also not exactly the most sane person. Because Savoy is a character, and we all love him for being such a larger-than-life character in this comic. Except Tony Chu is a very normal kind of person. There's nothing about him that's larger-than-life. He's a guy you could meet tomorrow if you took away the, like, eating empathy power. Right? He's a guy you could run into on the street. And a lot of the people in this comic are real people. Like, we talked about teenage kids and how they're so fucking stupid, and this is a good example of a fucking stupid teenage kid. Savoy is bigger than all of that in a way that might not be entirely stable. So I do kind of, when I get to the end of this, like, you roll with Savoy because it's kind of the tone of the comic and it's all good and to go and everything, but at the end of this I'm kind of like questioning his sanity and his ability to think rationally. Maybe not think rationally, because he's a good agent. You have every reason to believe he was a good agent.
Well, I think that's the path we're supposed to go down, because we're following along with Tony, right?
Yeah.
And this is how Tony is experiencing, you know, there's this guy who's mentoring him, who takes a bullet for him.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's this man obviously has some honor and some, you know, he's not a completely sociopathic, immoral, or amoral person, you know, because he does good. He is fighting for what he considers to be the greater good. And, you know, one could argue that, you know, any, like, villain is fighting for their version of the greater good. I mean, like, Lex Luthor thinks the Earth would be better off without Superman, and he's holding back humanity. So that's why he wants to get rid of, you know, get rid of Superman. Or, like, Cobra Commander probably thinks that he can do a better job running the world. So that's why Cobra tries to take over the world. You know? So I think that Savoy will be Chu's nemesis, but only because from Chu's perspective, well, from everybody's perspective, as far as the letter of the law goes, he committed a crime and he needs to be brought in for that.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Full stop. You know.
Yeah. And I mean, I just wish that the timing had worked out so he had told Tony, because they would have done it by the book and gone on with their investigation, and they would have been, like, you know, merry partners to the end. I'm really sad about this turn of events. I don't like it.
I think the other option that could have been, that could have had any, like, impact on the story, is that if Tony had agreed with Savoy, because, I mean, there's a third choice in which Chu ignores it and just moves along with his life, and that wouldn't have been any kind of story. He would have been culpable to, you know, to whatever Savoy's doing, And, you know, maybe that would have been, you know, that he could have still been a protagonist for our story. But I think that the way that this went down is ultimately good for storytelling. But I can see where you're coming from, where it can be disappointing, because we got to know this character and we all certainly liked him.
Well, and this is disappointing for everybody in the comic, too.
Yeah.
This is disappointing for Tony, because now there's not much that's good about his job at the FDA. His boss sucks. He's going to have a partner who doesn't know about his powers, or probably even thinks that they're disgusting, the same way most normal people in this comic look at him and his abilities. It sucks for Savoy on multiple fronts. Savoy's pissed immediately because he's lost his job, but I'm sure Savoy also was hoping to get Chu on his side, because there's only three of them in the world, and he says one of them's a Russian. And he knows Russian, so maybe he's working with the other one. I don't know, here nor there. But, like, you get the sense that he was hoping to turn Chu to his side. And that's gone now. That's something he might have been working for that is no longer an option. At least not in the immediate term. Maybe long term, he'll has to play it out in a much more strung out kind of way. So they're both disappointed. I'm sure Appleby's disappointed because Savoy was like an all-star agent from all things that were given here. And now he's stuck with Chu, who he hates. Like, literally, this turn of events is not good for anybody here. They're all disappointed by it. It just kind of sucks. So let's get down to the art. What did you guys think about the art?
It was great for this. I felt like the tone of the art worked really well. It was slightly distorted, kind of cartoonish, but in, like, almost a street-style graffiti kind of way. You know, it wasn't goofy cartoon art. It was more rough than that, but certainly not, you know, like, dark 90s comics or anything. And it wasn't sleek either. And this is a dirty comic. Nothing about this should be sleek, so I thought it was absolutely perfect. And the way they captured facial expressions with, you know, just such tiny amounts of detail that nothing in this was overwrought.
Yeah. I really love the two-page spreads when they came up. Well, the first awesome one we get is the tons and tons of little panels when he takes a bite of the soup.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, there's the green squares where it's the, like, good preparation of the meal done right. And, like, there's so few and far between. There's all these red squares of, like, people getting strangled and injured and eyeballs and cuts and fingers. And it's like, oh, God. It's like, that's horrifying. And then the other one that I love is the, which issue number was this? Issue 4. Where the first, when you first open it, it's a two-page spread of the observatory.
Oh, yeah, that was
yes, cool. With the llama.
With the llama, and it's like, what the fuck is this? Because not only is the scene a big what-the-fuck moment, but, like, why is this an observatory? And the scale and the art's done really, really well there, and it's just, like, there's little details, like, what the magazines are, and, like, there's just, like, a blown-off hand. There's just, like, a bunch of little details just sprinkled around in here really gently that just make you want to examine the art more closely, even though it's really easy to just glaze over it and be like, yeah, cool, this is great. Savoy looks weird, but it works. All right, cool. Like, the comic is drawn in a way that you can just roll along with it, but if you take the time to, like, look at the details in the background, it reminds me of a lot of Amanda Conner in that way. Amanda Conner's got that really nice, like, glossy, refined style that you could just breeze through and appreciate it for its surface value, but she takes the time and effort to put little details all over the place that just add so much character to a comic. And Rob G has done the same here. I'm not going to pronounce the name again, because that'd be bad for me.
Oh, well, I was going to say similar things to what Jen said about, you know, about how the art totally fits the theme. It carries and the grittiness, but gritty in that it actually is a very dirty place, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I was just going to rehash what Jen had said.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and just wrap this up and throw down some ratings. David, what do you got?
You know, I like this one a lot, and I, you know, it's good. It's definitely a good comic. And I can see why people like it so much and why it's done so well. I mean, it's a New York Times best-selling comic. I don't know if I want to give it a 5, though. I'm going to give it a 4.5. There's just something about it. I don't feel like it was as up there with Pretty Deadly, you know,
or
even Peter Panzerfaust. This is definitely a good comic, and I'm not trying to sell it short. It's great, but it's just not. I don't know. There's just not something. Just something that's not quite at level 5. But, you know, the writing is good. The premise is awesome. I mean, who in a million years would have thought that something like that we would be reading a comic about a guy who gets psychic impressions from eating stuff? And not just food, anything he puts in his mouth is kind of strange. You know, I mean, he licks the guy's blood and gets the code for the vault door, which is pretty cool. And the art's excellent. It's perfect for this comic. So, you know, it's definitely good. I'd recommend this to anybody, especially people who are not necessarily comic fans, or have something, you know, something against Cape Comics or whatever. But it's just, I don't know why I feel bad giving it a 4.5. That's an excellent rating. So 4.5.
Yeah, I don't really feel bad because I'm going to give it a 4. I would have given
you
it.
You should feel bad, Andy.
I would have given it a 3.5 because the story kind of moves along, and I like that in the beginning it kind of starts you off feeling like a normal sort of procedural cop kind of thing, and then it starts to twist a little bit, and it just twists a little bit more and twists a little bit more, and it takes this basic idea and just keeps spinning it around in a really fun, quirky kind of way until at the end it spins around and falls over and you get Savoy flipping and all this stuff, and it's like, okay, I thought I knew what was going on, and now it's completely changed. So I was going to give it a 3.5. That's what I had in my mind. But then I think about how excited I am to read the next trade. Because, like I said before, I had read the first volume, I read the first issue. And I was like, this is good. So I went out and bought the first and second trade. And I hadn't actually read them before this. And now I am really excited to see the second trade and see if Savoy comes up and see what Tony Chu's life is going to be like as an FDA agent without Savoy there. And just see how this idea continues to grow and change, because it's a really innovative premise. Like the psychic impressions through food is great. So it's a 4 because I know what this comic is going to be when I keep reading it, and I can't wait. So 4 from me.
Cool.
Jen?
4.5. I, despite my grossed out factor, really did enjoy this, and I do want to read more. So I'm going to get more issues, I think. This was so weird. And, like, it was weird in the way that just really stood out, right? It wasn't like, mindfuck weird. It was like, this is really creative weird.
Not like the filth weird?
Not like the filth weird. That was really confusing weird. And it just had such good humor, too. Like, I really like the art, I like the writing, the premise is excellent, so yeah, 4.5. It just doesn't have that, as you said, David, you know, like, special something that, like, Pretty Deadly had. But, you know, maybe if I read more, it will.
Yeah, I'm convinced the second trade will be even better than the first.
That's a good point to remember, listeners, is that we're rating just these first 5 issues, so, maybe this will be a we've been thinking lately about going back and revisiting some comics. So maybe this will be one we go back and revisit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's it for our Image series, our Image Revisited series. I guess we'll call it that. Up next is something that's going to be really fun. Next, we're going to read comics for ladies.
Oh, man.
So this next series, Jen, is going to be for you.
Oh, my.
Because the previous 183 episodes weren't, apparently.
Nope.
And so we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk more overtly about feminism in comics. And I had seen some list online of comics to buy your girlfriend to get her into comics. And I was like, that is stupid. And it set me off on a trip. So we're going to read 3 comics, not off of that list, but comics that are generally considered like either Tumblr feminist darlings or... like, when you walk into a store with, like, your daughter that's, like, 12, like, what should I get my daughter to read? Like, those kind of recommendations. And then, of course, the typical recommendation of what you should get, like, your girlfriend or wife if you want to get her into comics. So
the filth.
The answer is tarot. It's tarot, right? It's tarot.
No, you say tarot, but I swear to God, on half of these lists was Witchblade, which is, like, the most misogynistic thing you've read. It was horrendous. So anyway, the first thing we're going to read is the Tumblr feminist darling Red Sonja, Queen of Plagues, which collects issues 1-6, written by Gail Simone with art by Walter Giovanni. And that one's a Twitter or a Tumblr darling because if you've ever seen a picture of Red Sonja, she's the most sexually drawn warrior queen you've ever seen, next to Deja Thoris. And she should not be a feminist just by looking at the cover, but that's maybe the whole thing I'm thinking. I don't know. We'll see. Then after that, we're going to read Captain Marvel in Pursuit of Flight. It collects issues 1-6, written by Kelly Sue DeConnick with art by Dexter Soy. And that's kind of the modern reinterpretation of a traditional Cape comic Ms. Marvel changes her name, gets a new outfit, and we'll talk about more of those details when we get there. And the last one has been a recommendation for when people ask, what should I buy my wife to get her into comics? Why the Last Man, the first volume, Unmanned, written by Brian K. Vaughan, also with Pia Guerra and a Jose Marzan Jr. That's the one that, like, for a decade now, if you go into a comic book shop and say, I want to buy a comic to get my wife into comics, they'll say Fables and they'll say Why the Last Man. So we're going to get around to reading Why the Last Man.
You know what comic my wife got for a while was Anita Blake.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's a bunch of these.
Yeah.
But your comic, your wife was also hardcore into Walking Dead for a little bit there, too.
Yeah. She read all four, the first 11 trades in like 2 weeks.
Just awesome. Because that was a good comic, too.
Yeah. She's more up to date on Walking Dead than I am.
So that's what we have coming up on our next series. If you want to know what we have coming up after that, go to our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com. If you have a suggestion for what we could talk about, send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
Also, we're on all the social medias. You can let us know there, too. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, I said it too soon.
That's okay.